Welcome to season 4 of the Brave Writer podcast, A Brave Writer's Life in Brief. I'm Julie Bogart, your host. This season, we are releasing via audio our most popular YouTube broadcasts. We're so excited that you can now listen to these on audio while you're running, driving in the car, or folding laundry. We will also sprinkle throughout this season original content, interviews with people I think are compelling to listen to. If you get a chance, please help us out by leaving a review at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to Brave Writers podcast. We really appreciate it. It helps us get the word out, and it also gratifies all the people behind the scenes who work so hard to bring these to you for free. And now, let's get going with this episode. Today's podcast episode is going to be quite a treat. I stumbled on Leah Boden's Instagram account about a year ago and discovered a kindred spirit. One of my most popular conference talks is called Updating Charlotte Mason to the 21st Century. And here was Leah running a website called The Modern Miss Mason. As a Brit, I figured she'd have strong, well-formed opinions about this topic, so I invited her to share on our podcast today. Leah is a member of the wildly popular Wild and Free community. Get it? Wildly popular? Yeah. Anyway, she's one of their writers and speakers. I had the fun of speaking at one of those events in Portland last spring, so I know the amazing energy of that group. Somehow, with all that going on, Leah has 4 kids that she is currently homeschooling, and she's been at it for 11 years. Her Instagram photos include the beautiful English countryside, all their nature journaling activities, which make all of us in the state salivate. And I can't wait to dig in and hear about how she's brought the guiding principles of our dear Charlotte to life in our current era. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you. So great to be in this space, Julie. So great.
Well, we're in for a treat because, first of all, your accent, every American envies it. So I'm so thankful to have you. And in your honor, I'm drinking PG Tips while we're having this interview.
Really?
Oh,
well,
yes.
Well done you. That's the best. Well,
it is.
Yorkshire tea is the best, actually. Yorkshire would be up there, but PG comes very close.
So I buy Yorkshire when I want to spend more money.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so expensive in the States. I get that.
Yes.
I'll have to bring you some.
Oh, that would be truly wonderful. So, Leah, here's what I want to talk to you about today. I am also a Charlotte Mason fan. I remember early on in my homeschooling journey, discovering her back in, you know, the dark ages of the 20th century in the 1990s. And of course, I read her 6-volume set. I read A Charlotte Mason Companion. I read Catherine Levison's work. How did you discover Charlotte? How did she come into your life?
So similar, when we first began our home educating journey, when as a family and my husband and I have started to research, you know, what was this? Is this legal in our country? Because we didn't know anybody who did it. But we felt that we wanted to take control over over what was going on with the education system and our children. And I just started to do the stuff you do. You Google, you research, and I came across Charlotte Mason probably about 12 years ago. And, you know, she was a Brit. She was from England, and she was from the north where I'm from, and there was so much about her writing and what people were saying about her that I immediately fell in love with her stuff. I immediately could relate to how she saw children and the world that they could connect to. So even before we began our personal homeschooling journey, I started to read around, and what I discovered is that anybody who pioneered kind of resurrecting her work were people in the States. And it was Ash initially in America where I'd heard about home education and kind of it sown a seed in me a long time ago. So it was literally from the internet and people like, Catherine Levison, I read her books, bought the volumes very quickly, started to make my way through those. Karen Andriola, we all love her.
Yes.
And another one, I think Charlotte Mason Help is a website. I don't know if it's still, I want to say Linda DeFay.
Oh.
So that rings a bell. I think she was probably homeschooling when you were first beginning as well, again. And she was a really great help to me. So I just, started there, I guess, like most people do, but was constantly looking for people in the UK. And it was difficult.
Yes, I can well imagine. It's ironic because Susan Schaefer-McCauley's book, For the Children's Sake, really brought Charlotte Mason to life for so many people. She's American, who was born and raised in Switzerland, but married a British person, and her children were in those PNEU schools, I think, which
That's
is what
right.
got her talking about it. And so it's interesting to me how her work caught the imagination of Americans. That's really what brought her out, I think, to the fore in the 80s and 90s. Have you read that book as well, For the Children's Sake?
I have read that. I have read that, and I recommend it and buy it for people and pass it around. And that was one of the first books I read also. And it is interesting how, I mean, you know, the home education movement really in the past 10 to 15 years has begun to grow here in the UK. But when we started, when I started researching 12 years ago, I knew two of the families.
Wow.
Who did it too. Now, it's numerous. I mean, we have huge communities here now in the UK, and it's growing all the time. So much so, the government are getting twitchy, but that's a whole other podcast. but it was interesting, just kind of, and I feel, so over the past even 4 or 5 years, I've gathered online a growing number of home educators within the UK who are in some way, shape, or form following the Charlotte Mason philosophy or trying to integrate her methods. But it's taken a lot of time, and people it's very slowly coming back to the attention of people here in the UK, which is interesting. I recently got together with the director of the Charlotte Mason Institute when he was over here in the UK, and he was fascinated, really. He didn't know many people in the UK who were actually doing it, living it, you know, kind of trying to integrate it into their homes. So it's still very fresh. It really is here in our country.
I believe it. And one of the things that I find fascinating, I think the American equivalent to Charlotte Mason in terms of attitude towards children and even similar or somewhat overlapping philosophies of education would be Maria Montessori.
Yes.
She, of course, is an American. And I had a professor in grad school who cares deeply about education, used to teach at a Montessori public school just as a, you know, pro bono offer. He would do mythology for eighth graders. And he told me that he believes that if Maria Montessori had been a man, the education system in America would look entirely different. But
How
because she was a woman, instead, her ideas were seen as a sort of specialized education for the few. And I wonder if in the UK, you're sort of dealing with a similar notion. You've got this very long-term view of how education should be delivered through the school system there. And then Charlotte comes along, and she, along with Charles Dickens, really championed the cause of children's rights, of children being persons, right? And that really flew in the face of these very sturdy educational models that were about producing workers, whether that was in the States or the UK. And so what we have then are these innovative women, these educational reformers, Maria Montessori, Charlotte Mason, trying to value the humanity of children. And of course, it's seen as sort of like an extracurricular subject.
Right.
It's not seen as the core of education.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you read through Charlotte Mason's work, she quotes, writers before, people like John Ruskin, and, you know, she's kind of quoting people who have gone before her. Many of her ideas have often taken from philosophies, and she's brought them into what she would have known as, it would have been modern day to her, trying to bring to life education and how we view children. And she seemed to have a voice. I mean, she was a contemporary of people like Beatrix Potter. It's interesting when
yes.
you go to the Lake District. I don't know if you've visited there.
I have not.
So there's a museum there, and there's kind of all these writings and bits of memorabilia from Beatrix Potter. And also there's a desk of Charlotte Mason's. It's quite wonderful to walk through. But actually both of them were revolutionizing. Beatrix Potter was bringing to life various scientific discoveries, but wasn't accepted because she was a woman. And Charlotte was shaking up the education system, but she seemed to integrate more and was heard and was just putting it into practice. She just seemed to get it going and just said, this is what we're doing. And I love that her mission was that this delectable education, this varied feast, shouldn't just be for the elite. And she talks about these mining villages, which I can picture. I've been there. You know, my grandparents were from those kind of places. That, you know, these kids were being raised to work in the down the pits. And she said, why shouldn't they see beautiful art? Why shouldn't they hear literature and read literature? And her greatest, one of her greatest triumphs was seeing these methods and this philosophy integrated into the very normal core of these villages where education wasn't seen as important. And that's the stuff that I want to bring to life, is that I think we've made it a little bit more elite again. It's become this kind of thing that's high and mighty and unachievable. And I'm really an activist saying, this is supposed to be normal. This is supposed to be for everyone.
Oh my
Everyone's
gosh.
Everyone's supposed to be able to grasp this. But yet, why have we made it this elite thing that people can't, you know, you have to be, you know, majorly academic or to be able to. And I see and I hear from mothers all the time who feel inferior or not able or not smart enough. And I'm like, come on. We're going to do this. You can do this.
Oh, no, I literally, yeah. While you were talking about the mining villages, I got chills because yes. Truly one of the brilliant outcomes of the last two centuries is this notion of education for the masses. I like to That's remind right. homeschoolers all the time that public education has been wildly successful. It has literally been responsible for the progress you see on every single level of society, communications, travel, technology, every aspect of modern life is because the average person has gotten educated. Our opportunity in homeschool isn't to negate education and treat public education as though it's a failure. It's to bring a critique to its limits. But it's not a failure. It's been wildly successful. Billions of people read and write and calculate. And that was not true 200, 300 years ago. It was only for the landed gentry, the people who had means and tutors and private lessons and, you know, these in America, private schools, in Britain, what they call public schools, but the same idea. It's That's what you right. pay yeah. for. And so, yes, I love that. In fact, while we're sitting here chatting, I'm looking at this massive card that was made for me recently. We took poetry tea time to a community of kids who are in a day program. They're disadvantaged youth, many in the foster care system, some wow. without parents. We brought poetry tea time to these kids and we did it for a whole day. We had two different seatings, younger kids and then high school. These children, many of them had never held a teapot, had never had someone give them a special table setting where they could put out a tablecloth and decorate it with flowers and light candles. Wow. And then we stacked up all these poetry books and had everyone read. And it was the kids' idea themselves to make me this gorgeous card. I'm not kidding. It's 2 feet tall by about a wow. foot and a half. It's decorated. They each wrote me personal notes. And my favorite note says, thank you. I've never held something so beautiful as a teapot before.
Oh, and they, so incredible.
And then they asked for poetry books. They didn't say buy us teapots. They asked for poetry. And so
How incredible.
Yes. And so here's this perfect example in our current model where we might be thinking, oh, it's for homeschool or it's for a little tea party birthday, or maybe we could do it in a local private school. But here we have, you know, children who don't even have books at home. We sent them all home with our poetry book. They don't have books at home. And we introduced them what? Not to, you know, See Spot Run, but to Walt Whitman. And they
Absolutely.
Wanted to take these
Come
books
on.
Home. Isn't that amazing? Yes.
I love that. And it is, I'm amazed. I mean, I think you saw my photographs, but I hosted a an outdoor poetry tea a few weeks back with a community of educators. And it was like a big picnic, but people actually brought teapots. And I had children, we had children reciting poems they'd written themselves, as well as bringing their favorites. But it, what I discovered from some of the conversation, talking to some of the mums, that they were saying they'd been intimidated by poetry because they'd never read it as a child. They never had it read to them. They saw it as something you only did if you studied English literature. But actually having their, introducing it to their children, and even, you know, those of us who were responsible for bringing community together and saying, hey, have you read a poem today, to the mothers, you know, mother culture stuff, they suddenly realize how it has enriched their lives, not because it's unreachable and it's this academic achievement, but actually it's just beauty and it's life and it's words and language. And it was so great. And these are women who are, you know, home educating. But I love that idea of taking it into the community and bringing, and that's what Charlotte would have done, exactly what she would have done. It's like, let's take it to those who don't get to access this normally.
Absolutely. And I think what you're mentioning, this sort of intimidation factor, is a hangover from treating these, you know, works of art, works of literature, as for those who are privileged, the privileged few. And even the way poetry and literature is often taught in schools ends up being a disincentive to continuing that practice after you're out of your education. And so what we really want to do is reclaim it. You know, I love to tell parents all the time, you have the right to dislike a poem. You don't have to like them all.
No,
you can listen
to
a poem, not get it, not think it's interesting, not want to read it again. But does that mean that all poetry then is off limits? We don't do that with music. We say, oh, I don't like that style. Those lyrics aren't for me. But we have our favorites. And poetry is just song lyrics without the musical, you know, notes that go with it. And so same thing with artwork. You know, I love being able to introduce children to artwork because they have such unvarnished reactions. And sometimes they will notice the most obscure element in the painting. You're looking at it thinking, oh, that's kind of boring. It looks like a bunch of cherubs and, you know, a woman sitting on a chair. And then they point, they're like, look, there's a rat and he's underneath the chair. And you're like, there is a rat. What's the rat doing there? You know, so there's like this whole way of encountering what we have seen as being high culture, but in a very immediate, direct way. And I think children sometimes give us that access that we've lost as adults.
They absolutely do. I mean, I run twice a month, I run a nature group. And part of that nature group, we, if it's raining, we sit and, well, even if we do, it's not raining, we spend a bit of time reading poetry and looking at a painting. And the youngest is three or four, I think, in the group. She's four now. But she will spot things in the pieces of art that nobody else has seen. And it just is incredible. And, you know, she'll point out the color or a bit of texture, or like you said, like an animal somewhere that nobody else sees. And they do. Children bring things to life, and that's why we're supposed to be around them. They bring definition to things that have become a little bit stale in our adult life. And I wouldn't want it any other way. I'm like, tell me what you think. Tell me what you see. I think it's such a great question, which is why narration is amazing, because you're not saying to them, this is what you should see, this is what you should hear. But you're saying, you tell me. Tell me from your brilliant mind, you know, what you've heard and what
you
see. It's so great.
You're listening to the Brave Writer Podcast. Today, I want to tell you about Instagram. It turns out Instagram is my favorite social media playground. I love to share photos of my family, inspirational photos about homeschooling and writing, and sometimes I even share your photos with our community. My goal for my Instagram account is to provide you with inspiration, a belief that you will get there someday, that you're doing the right things to bring about a quality education for your family. And I also like to share writing advice. If you are looking for a place where you can hang out and experience a lot of support, join me at Julie Brave Writer. That's my account, at Julie Brave Writer. I also like to share photos from your poetry tea times at my other Instagram account, at Poetry Tea Time. Please come follow along. If you want me to see what you're sharing on Instagram, use the hashtag Brave Writer Lifestyle, or simply tag me in your photos. I love to comment, send hearts, smiley faces, the whole nine yards. So let's get this thing going. And now, let's return to today's podcast. What would you say is one of your favorite Charlotte guiding principles? Maybe something we haven't even discussed yet.
I mean, I think beyond anything else is seeing the child as a whole, as a born person.
Yes.
And I think that's something I really see in your work, Julian, and respect that you champion children because they're humans and they're amazing and they are so capable of much more than society says they are. And I just, that for me, often people will say, where do I start with the Charlotte Mason philosophy? They want a tick list of do this, do that. And I'm like, it starts with how you view your kids.
Yes.
That would be the quick question for me. How do you see your children? And if you get that, but if you begin with that process, that they are born persons, they're whole, they are brilliant and capable of seeing and connecting with the world in a refreshing new way that nobody else can. If you believe that, then you can start to dish out the feast. Then you can start to say, right, what do I bring in front of them? And that is, it's a real paradigm shift in education.
Oh my goodness.
Completely
yes.
Upside down. And I, you know, people often want advice on what books to get and, you know, what lists to follow. But I always bring people back to how do you view your children? And that's changed my whole view of family and mothering and educating, I think. And it's a growing, developing thought that you have, that you get challenged in it all the time, especially when you're dealing with, you know, the day in, day out, life with kids.
Oh, yes, 100%. And in fact, I love what you're saying because it is a challenge. We have to remind ourselves that our children are not projects that we're working on. They are our offspring, certainly, and we are introducing them to the world, but it is as a co-conspirator. It is not that we're doing education to children. We are coming alongside them. One of my favorite Charlotte lines, I wish I had the exact quote, but I remember when she was describing oral exams in one of her books, and she said, "The goal of an oral exam is to find out what the child knows, not to reveal what we think they should have known." You know, it's not
That's
to show
right.
them what they don't know yet. So the goal is to let them, in a sense, show off. So I remember I set up one time with my children. I was completely inspired by this idea and I wanted to see if it would work. So I wrote down all of these little like questions that could be an oral exam. I had done oral exams in France as a university student. And so I had a sense of how they did it there. So I wrote them down on these little slips of paper, put them in a hat, and each child was allowed to pull out two and then pick one to do. And what we did is, yes, it was great. We had a tape recorder. Back then you didn't have iPhones. So we had a tape recorder with a little microphone that they could hold. And I taped them. And they were questions like, you know, what is the story of America's independence? And that would be this big, broad, empty question. Like I didn't have any agenda of what they would talk about. Would they actually talk about, you know, Paul Revere's ride? Or would they talk about the Boston Tea Party? Or would they just tell me about the last 4th of July celebration? Literally, I had no frame of reference. But they enjoyed it so much. They went back and replayed all of those oral exams just to listen to themselves be experts.
So great.
It was so great. And it was so the opposite experience of testing. And I think that's one of her great contributions is to value what your child offers rather than constantly evaluating them for what they don't know yet.
Right. And who are we to say, like in that sense, that they should know this and their brain should function this way and they should process it this way? I love hearing all the different opinions from my children because they see the world in a different way. And I want to celebrate that. And I love her notion of masterly inactivity, this whole idea of standing back and you're there, you're present. They know you're there. They feel safe. But you actually are allowing your children to bring forth from what's within them. And I think that's such a brilliant concept. And she describes it within the classroom, which I thought must be even harder. You imagine this schoolmistress, a Victorian schoolmistress, wandering around not hovering over the desk, not telling them what to do, but reading a story and then standing back and letting them express and process it themselves. I just think that's brilliant.
It is. Wow. I love the language, masterly inactivity.
Inactivity.
Yes. Yeah. And it enriches the feeling of inactivity by calling it masterly. She's
right.
A good wordsmith.
I just think it's brilliant. And I was describing this at Wild and Free last year. And I was trying to give this in, it's like, she talks about food all the time and she talks about the feast. I said, well, so imagine yourself, around a table, around a huge table, the opposite, the way the kind of traditional education system here works is, you make a meal, you put it down at the table, you invite the children around and you start to spoon it into their mouths and say, this is what this tastes like. This is what this texture's like. This is how you should feel when you swallow this. It's almost like,
oh my gosh.
Whereas what masterly inactivity is, we make the meal, even make it with your children. You gather around, you have all these different dishes, you put your napkin on your knee and you say, dig in, tell me what you think. What does it taste like? How is that for you? And I just think that's such a celebratory picture of education is we're not shoving stuff down our children's throats and saying, you are supposed to experience this avocado in this way. We're saying, how does it taste to you? And I just, that brought everything to life for me, that
fabulous.
Image. Of,
wow.
Right, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's fantastic. So what I'd like to ask you now in this vein, in a pivot, what is the difference between being a modern Miss Mason and maybe an originalist?
Okay. So here's where I'm careful, but yeah, let's go for it. So something I say a lot to them, those who choose to gather around my table, as it were, is that I don't want to reproduce a Victorian school in my house. That's never my intention. I've been through the archives in the Lake District. I've been to the Army. I've seen the PNEU timetables. I've put my fingers on Charlotte Mason's handwriting on her books. I've done
amazing.
The stuff. I've read the books. It's incredible. But in all that, and I love the history. I love the heritage. It's just incredible. But in it all, it has to bring my family to life. I have to see my children as whole and that they, I've got a son who loves scooting and mountain biking and he loves rap music, And like, how does that fit with the Charlotte Mason Foster? Well, of course it does. Everything does. You can make this happen. I've got all these different children with different personalities that... And I think when you sometimes look at the modern day 14-year-old and then you think about things like, listed hymn studies and folk study, some of that just never fit with my kids. It just didn't work. And so if I was to, what I did, what I say a lot is that it has to be a guiding principle. It's not something I hang everything on. It's not something that I say, if I don't do this, I'm not fulfilling my right as an educator. I don't think of it that way. I see this is guiding who we are as a family. I love the principles. They're sturdy, they're quality, they are so full of life. But they have to come into the big picture of what the Bowden family looks like and how they're developing. So that really is why I talk about finding your freedom within the philosophy. There are so many kind of schools of thought out there, terms that are thrown around. I don't use the word should. I don't tell people you should do it this way. You should. What do you feel? And I think seeing the mother as a whole person as well.
Yes.
Like seeing ourselves as being able to bring our voice to the table. And what does that make your child feel like? How have they responded to that? So some of it is about that. Another element of it is just updating some of the, being free. Like one of our art studies was Banksy. I was like, my teenage son was like, can we look at Banksy's artwork? So, he's like a graffiti artist.
And that's fabulous. Wonderful.
So I just went online, printed off. So did the same kind of thing that I would do with Van Gogh or anybody like that. Found six different pieces of his work, printed them off. We studied them over 6 weeks, and I think one of my kids has seen one in Liverpool on the wall. So we just discussed, and Banksy is really political. It brought up so many different amazing conversations. But for some of it, it's looking at that. Other things is things like poetry. Like, we have a good friend who's a spoken word poet, and he's brilliant. And so I started to introduce that into people's lives. Like, people were struggling with their boys doing poetry, and I was like, you know what, why not try some spoken word poetry? Listen to that. Listen, you know, try that out. And it's just kind of stretching your mind a little bit, introducing some new concepts. What is it our kids are looking at? What are they seeing? What are they engaging with? And how do we bring that to life alongside this philosophy? And I'm exploring things all the time, all the time.
No, I love that. And I love that you brought up a graffiti artist, because one of the things that I noticed in the 90s when I was on these email lists for Charlotte Mason, there was such a rigid attachment to her book list, to the sort of nostalgia of the Victorian era, this feeling of tea parties. And, you know, we're all fascinated with Britain anyway, in the United States. And so there's this idea that the education that comes from there must be more pure, more wholesome, more rigid, sturdy, maybe even more rigorous, maybe even. And I just feel like Charlotte was such a renegade in her era, and she was a revolutionary, that if she lived today, she'd be like, how awesome is it that we have artwork online? You know, let's print out a lithograph. Let's go to the movies. Let's look at comic books. She didn't have that available. She was literally saying, we need to furnish the halls of our minds with beautiful artwork, because we literally can't look at it except when we go to a museum. So the explosion of communications, technology, transportation, travel, the ability to enrich our lives that the modern era gives us, I think she would have readily embraced. Yes. And I also think that, you know, poor Charlotte, she came from an era that was not as well globalized as we are today. So the perspective she came from was still from, you know, the UK being the ruling British Empire that it was. Yeah. And her lens for the globe came through that sort of, you know, 19th century Enlightenment perspective. But today, we've had a revolution. We understand that other communities have made contributions, that other histories besides the West have value in our educations. And so to me, I just think Charlotte would have been the person pushing that envelope, actually.
So do I. I mean, and I think she was so progressive. I mean, her books, her six volumes were written over, what was it, 35, 40 years? And it's interesting, people get a bit shocked when they read volume six, because actually she changes some of her ideas from when she wrote volume one, because she was kind of moving forward and developing with what she was seeing and learning. And someone was reminding me of the other day is that actually what she was bringing to life there and then was modern. She was the modern Miss Mason. The one who was saying this is... I love the story of when she sent her books to India. Have you heard that story?
No, I haven't.
So I might have it in front of me. She sent it to a missionary out in India who was working... I think an English missionary got out to India. She was working with Indian children and wanted them to, she didn't want to kind of force an English education on them, but she wanted to give them a, you know, a good sturdy education. So all these books were sent out to her. And what she said, I'm flicking through a book whilst I'm talking to you, trying to find the quote, but what she said, this missionary, was she took the root, the trunk of the tree.
Yes.
And she applied that to the Indian culture. So, which really helped me think about this way of how we approach it. So she said she took the trunk and the roots and she applied that to the Indian culture. So even find Indian folk songs and things like that. But she brought to life in the Indian culture the philosophy that at that time. And that was, must have been early 20th century.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll have to send you the quote, Julie, when I find it. But it's so incredible, the story. I think it's quoted in the book When Children Love to Learn by Elaine Cooper. I know it's from there. And the tagline is Charlotte Mason's Philosophy for Today and How to Apply It Practically. But she talks about this when it was sent over to India. And I thought, how amazing that, you know, there are people in our day and age and US and UK culture who are struggling, or they think they have to do it in a very Victorian way. And I'm like, no, We are, I'm a 21st century family, you know, my kids are alive and well now and love stuff that they're seeing now. So I have to consider that. So
absolutely.
I'm learning all the time.
No, 100%. That's why I think film is a really important part of yes. everybody's education. It's the 20th century's contribution to the field of literature. And so film and television are not entertainment only, just like in Jane Austen's day, they didn't think novels were worth being read. Now we think that's the height of literature. When you've got these innovations in the arts and the sciences, we want to embrace them. We want to live in the era into which we were born. One of the things I like to say when I'm doing this talk about the Charlotte Mason life, I like to remind people that educational reform didn't end with Charlotte either. It has continued for a century. There are plenty of experts out there that we can be reading and learning from. And guess what? Every home educator is also an educational reformer. We have our own little laboratories in our houses. We are learning and discovering principles about learning because we are in this test tube environment, and we get to make those insights available back into the story of education. So I love to remind people, you are Charlotte Mason. I am Charlotte Mason, you know, sort of an I am Spartacus moment here. We are all Charlotte Mason. She is not a goddess. Yes.
That's exactly what I say, Julie. So the logo for Modern Miss Mason is, my husband did it, his background is graphic design. He took a picture of her and kind of took the face out, but you can see her hair and the shape. It's like an old picture of her, but there's no face in that. And when I first started to talk about this idea, this notion of Modern Miss Mason, it wasn't that I was her, although I believe what you're saying, absolutely. But I was saying, hey, your face fits here.
Absolutely.
You belong there.
That's
and this
right.
is a place where your face fits. And I'm saying the same
That's
thing.
That's amazing. I love
that. Walking that out. It's so great. Yeah.
That's fantastic. My gosh, we have so many things in common.
We do.
It's really fun. We could talk about this all day. I want you to share a little bit about your Facebook community, facebook.com/modernmissmason, and how people can participate in indulging their craving for more Charlotte.
Yes. So I have there's something on Facebook called the Modern Miss Mason Show, which, you know, remember our old Periscope days, Julie, where
yes.
I think
yes.
first heard you. So I shifted from that onto a Facebook page, and I do a weekly, so anyone can join that. And I do a weekly Facebook Live. I do a book club. We're going through Ourselves at the moment, which is volume 4. I do a thing on mother culture. And then I do a Charlotte Mason how-to, like a practical application of one of her methods. And then I do a normal kind of inspirational monthly thing. So four a month live on there. And that's ongoing all the time. I have a page, like everyone does, the Modern Miss Mason page for information on there. But what I began to do a couple of years ago was I created courses, video-based, online, Facebook-based courses, where just over a 6 or 7 day period, or I mean, once you're on there, you can actually take your time and take as long as you want. You've got them forever. On starting to bring to life this idea of Modern Miss Mason and what that looked like. So one of them is about narration. There's like a whole 6-7 sessions on narration. One is on going back to the foundations of atmosphere, discipline, life, and what that means and how we apply that. And my husband gets on there as well, speaking about vision and values. He works in the education system, so he brought a lot of, and people, it's crazy. People love that, I think, more than anything else. They just liked him bringing his two pence. And there's not many dads out there talking about it, so he likes to come on now and again and have a good chat. I have one on nature study.
Nice.
And bringing that to life. And then I've just finished one as a live masterclass, which I've now put out there for anybody, called Plan for Freedom, where I've basically said, whether you are a tight schedule timetabler or you wing it every day, there's something for everyone. And I talk through loop scheduling. I talk through something called a power hour, where if the whole day has gone wrong, you can, in 1 hour, can cover like 6 different subjects, and brilliant for people with babies and toddlers
nice.
Down their ankles. And so I've just kind of been creative, trying to put things into people's hands, which bring it to life, help them. My big thing, and I know for you, is like helping home educators find, just kind of build their self-esteem, find their confidence, find their freedom, really tell them, we believe in you, you can do this, and be a big cheerleader. I love cheerleading other home educators. Yeah, so that's really what modern medicine does. It kind of really puts meat on the bones of what it looks like in the 21st century, but also supports and champions people who are doing it.
And then building that community around the philosophy is really key. I love what you said in some of our prep materials. You said that one of the things you wish you had known when you started homeschooling was to shape the philosophy or method around your family, not trying to shape them into the philosophy. And it sounds to me like these video courses and the community you're building are all about that, helping parents who want to embrace this philosophy understand how to shape it around their family rather than, you know, trying to shoehorn their family into some imaginary idea of what they think the philosophy is. Does that sound right?
It's absolutely right. And, you know, and that you just, I mean, you must speak to people all the time. They just go through burnout. They can't sustain that. Yeah. You just got to press the restart button and kind of get them back on the road again. But yeah, that's definitely what it is. Yeah.
Well, you have been just delightful to talk to, and I'm so excited to share about Charlotte Mason. You know, she had such a huge impact on me in my early years of homeschooling, and clearly she's continuing to have that influence on you, and I know our community is really going to look forward to being a part of this conversation. And what would you recommend as an entry point for someone who is unfamiliar with Charlotte Mason? What do you think is a great way to get started?
I think if I was going for a book, and I mean, you know, I should always direct people to the six volumes, but people see the size of them and get overwhelmed immediately. My favorite thing that I send people to, which I think is this kind of overall brilliant package of understanding, is Karen Andriola's Charlotte Mason Companion. I just think it's really gentle. And even after 11 years, I've got it here right next to me. I can see it. It's right by my desk. I still dip into it. And I've had communication with Karen. We email now and again. At one point, I had to just thank her. I wanted to just reach out and thank her. And we continue to chat. But I just think it's beautiful. It's just gentle. It covers so much. I think it's a brilliant entry point to then sort of whetting your appetite. And there are so many wonderful resources out there in books now. But then, you know, diving into the volumes and trying to, I mean, a lot of those are out on audio now, which is great. I think LibriVox has got one of them on audio. So there are easier ways of accessing. And if I had the time, I would love to record them all. But, you know, maybe when I'm, I don't know, 20 years time. You know, when you have all these things you'd love to do, but you know, somebody else will get on with that. So yes, that is that was a great starting point for me.
I agree with that. I will mention, just for those in our audience who are not of a religious background, Charlotte herself was a Christian. Many of the people who've written about her are self-professing Christians. So you may run into Bible verses, references to God, heaven and hell. I mean, literally, it's all in there. So if you are interested in Charlotte Mason, just know that that's a part of the package. You can certainly skip the parts that don't apply to you. She has a whole section on discipline and obedience that I don't even fully love.
Remember to be a
critical reader. Just because someone you regard says it doesn't mean that it's the truth. It's just that person's perspective within their social location based on their background. And then you take what works for you and you spit out the seeds. So I just wanted to make sure I pointed that out so that nobody writes to me and says, you didn't warn me. Well, I'm warning you now.
We're both warning you. It's all there. Just skip over it.
Yep. Well, thank you, Leah, for joining me today. We will make sure that your Facebook and your Instagram accounts are available in the show notes for this episode. Anything else that you wanted to mention before we close?
I don't think so. It's just been an absolute honor, and I hope we get to cross paths maybe at Wild and Free one year. Maybe we'll get to speak at the same conference, Julie. That'd be great.
But thank you for all you do. You're so welcome. Yeah. No, it's lovely to meet you, and thank you for spreading the good word. It's great.
Thank you.
That's it for today. I hope you found some ideas you can implement even this week. I'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Instagram @JulieBraveWriter or you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/bravewriter. In the meantime, live honestly, write bravely. I'm Julie Bogart from Brave Writer.